I would say that Imam Ali was so courageous that he was had because we have hadith, courage is controlling of anger, controlling of your.
True.
He had complete control of his emotions.
True. Since we're talking about how to control
when he was being, this is very important. This is very, very important in our emotional controlling of ourselves or of our children. Imam Ali was the master of his emotions. There was no problem with that. He just did not want people to think that he was going to kill him because of a personal issue.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he was completely in command of himself.
Exactly.
Even if he had killed that person, that the enemy, well, was threatening Islam, was threatening the Holy Prophet, if he had killed him at that very spot when he spat in the face of the noble Imam, even that would have been without any doubt with pure sincerity.
Yeah. But here's a big lesson for us.
But he just wanted to show and give an example to people.
Exactly.
Look, if you are faced with a situation where you feel that you're doing something for not for the sake of Allah, but for the sake of yourself and for expressing your emotions or feelings or answering the call of your emotions, to stop and take a breath and step back.
All right.
And he was giving a lesson in self-control. So, yes, very important. A very good example that you gave. So anger management is becoming courageous.
Yeah. We'll talk more on that after a short break, dear listeners. Stay tuned to IRIV English Radio.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. We're talking about the control of emotions. First of all, parents need to have that emotional control themselves, and then that's how they can teach that to their children. We have Professor Nakawi with us. Yes.
Yes, thank you. So, control of emotions, as Imam Ali mentioned in that hadith, it has been quoted that he said that subdue your emotions and control them through the intellect.
Yeah.
That is something godly. That is from the heavens. That is from the angels. Animal instincts are from are worldly things. They are requirements of the world. You have to have that anger. There's a self-defense mechanism there, but it has to be managed so that you become courageous.
There's also one more hadith that says, kill your anger with silence, from Imam Ali.
Yes, that's the technique of doing so, exactly.
So can we teach our children, like, if you feel like angry at some places, just don't say anything.
Keep silent. Keep silent. Control your tongue. Sit down or stand up. Start taking deep breaths. That's techniques of controlling.
Those are techniques.
But before that is the intellectual understanding that, look, what am I going to do? I hope I'm not going to do something which is for my own personal gain.
Okay.
I'm doing this. I want to set an example. I want to show him the right path. I want to tell my child to do what is right for the sake of Allah. And I'm doing it for the sake of myself.
So you're basically trying to say whatever our emotions are, whatever the level of our emotions is, be that a level of wherein we cannot, wherein we have a different set of feelings and it comes out sometimes as abuse or something. You're trying to say even our feelings, when we are trying to express them, it should be for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
And when is it for Allah Almighty? When you have that background in your mind.
The supreme power.
The whole bigger picture.
Reflect on that bigger picture.
Go back to the bigger picture. Where do you stand?
Yeah. Well, we'll talk more on that after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned to IRIB English Radio.
Ya muqdiya al-khayrat. Ya muqdiya al-khayrat. Ya muqdiya al-khayrat.
The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam said, honor your children and teach them good manners.
Ya muqdiya al-khayrat. Ya مطي الخيرات.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. We're talking about how to control your emotions. And we're first talking about how parents can control that so that they can teach their children with their own practice how to have a control on their emotional development, how to control the different forms of feelings and emotions. Yes.
Yes. We were talking about the emotions, and the second type of emotions it pertains to the desires we have, the love for the food we
okay.
have, love for things which are required for our clothes, our food, our things which protect us.
True.
Which sustain us.
Okay.
We need these things.
Yeah.
If we want to live in this world, and we have to do so in a proper way, we have to take care of these things.
Yeah.
But it has to be under the command of the intellect. What I eat, is it for the sake? Is it just? Is it eating for the sake of living, or is it living for the sake of eating?
Okay, that's a big difference.
That's a big difference. I need to eat to live, not to live. I'm not living to eat.
Yeah, yeah.
Because animals.
Then you're as good as an animal.
So, are eating? What is it? Is it halal or haram? Is it appropriate or not? Is it nutrition? Does it have nutritional value or not? Is it going to make me fat? Is it going to make me whatever, obese? Or is it...
So you can just hold the hand of your child, take him out to the environment, make him show like the cats are eating, the dogs are eating, different animals are eating, and there's a difference between their eating and your eating.
Exactly. It has to be with understanding.
Yeah.
With the knowledge, the background there, the pure intentions. You have to do it yourself. Control you. So this lusts and desires, they also have two extremes, and one state of equilibrium,
yeah.
which is called chastity, iffah.
Okay.
That as in the case of anger, we is call it courage or shaja'a.
True.
Here we have iffah.
Okay.
Or chastity.
Okay.
And all of this. Under the, again, the intellect also has two extremes.
Okay.
And there's the equilibrium that is called hikmah.
All right.
And when a person has hikmah, wisdom, courage, chastity, iffah, he becomes an adil, a just person, a person who is a good person, a person who is a salih person.
Okay.
Who is salih.
All right.
Who has all these things, equilibriums.
All right.
Wisdom, courage, and
chastity. All right. So we came to a conclusion that if there is anger, you even want to show off your anger, it should come out as courage. Like Lady Zainab, give her sermons in between Kufians, in between the people of Kufa, and she showed her courage through her words with her anger. Her anger was actually reflecting her courage. And there are so many stories wherein we can have, we can see if there are desires, lust within us that can end up as chastity and wisdom as well. Thank you so much, Professor Nakave, for being with us. Thank you so much to your listeners. You are listening to IRIB English Radio. In case you want to listen again, you can go back to our official website. That's www.parstoday.com. You can go to the tab, Call of Islam, and out there you can search Islamic Upbringing, and you'll find all our episodes over there. Thank you so much for being with us once again. And in case you have any questions, you have any issues, you have any... anything you want to ask about the Islamic upbringing of your children, you can feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Until another session, fi amanallah, God bless you all.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space returned upon rest. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way. Islam solves all of our problems. Allah leaves no stone unturned. Perfect with no flaws at all are the laws of Allah.
in the limelight.
In the United States, Meta's president of global affairs, Nick Clegg, has said he has to decide on Donald Trump's possible 2023 return to Instagram and Facebook. Please stay with us for more on this story. The British newspaper The Guardian has more on this story. Nick Clegg, Meta's president of global affairs, is charged with deciding whether former US President Donald Trump will be allowed to return to Facebook and Instagram in 2023, Nick Clegg confirmed on Thursday, 22nd of September. Speaking at an event held in Washington by news organization Semaphore, Nick Clegg said, the company was seriously debating whether Donald Trump's accounts should be reinstated and said it was a decision that I oversee and I drive. Clegg added that while he will be making the final call, he will consult the chief executive officer of Meta, Mark Zuckerberg, the Facebook board of directors and outside experts. It is not a capricious decision, he said. We will look at the signals related to the real-world harm to make a decision whether, at the two-year point, which is early January next year, whether Donald Trump gets reinstated to the platform. The former president was suspended from a number of online platforms, including those owned by Meta, following the 6th of January 2021 Capitol riot, during which Donald Trump used his social media accounts to praise and perpetuate the violence. While Twitter banned Donald Trump permanently, Meta suspended Trump's account for 2 years, to be later re-evaluated. In May of 2021, a temporary ban was upheld by Facebook's Oversight Board, a group of appointed academics and former politicians meant to operate independently of Facebook's corporate leadership. However, the board returned a final decision on Trump's accounts to Meta, suggesting the company decide in 6 months' time whether to make the ban permanent. Nick Clegg said that that decision will be made on 7th of January 2023. Nick Clegg previously served as Britain's Deputy Prime Minister and joined Facebook as Vice President for Global Affairs and Communications in 2018. In February of this year, he was promoted to the top company policy executive role. The website Gizmodo.com has more on this story. Donald Trump could be back to his old social media antiques in just a few months. The two-year ban barring the former president from Facebook expires at the beginning of 2023. And Meta, Facebook's parent company, hasn't revealed whether it will be extending Donald Trump's virtual exile. When you make a decision that affects the public realm, you need to act with great caution, Nick Clegg, Meta's president of global affairs, said during a media event hosted by the news organization Semaphore. It seems that Nick Clegg is the one who will ultimately be tasked with deciding, one way or the other, the fate of Donald Trump's Facebook presence. The executive further explained that, to determine the company's future course of action, Meta would consult with outside sources and assess the risk of real-world harm, all of which echoes previous company statements. The former president, Donald Trump, was kicked off of Meta platforms, Facebook and Instagram, the day after 6th of January 2021 insurrection at the US Capitol, for his role in inciting the violent riots on that day. Initially, the chief executive officer, Mark Zuckerberg, announced the block would last indefinitely. However, Meta's oversight board contested that decision and mandated that a timeline for re-evaluation will be imposed. In June of 2021, the company complied with the board's request and declared that, at the end of 2 years, it would look to experts to assess whether the risk to public safety has receded. In the wake of 6th of January 2021, YouTube also instituted a ban on Donald Trump, and so did Twitter, whether the former president seemed to spend the bulk of his online time. Notably, in contrast to Meta, Twitter's ban is permanent. After the technology giant announced their prohibition on Donald Trump, he responded with a lawsuit, and then he created Truth Social, his own free speech platform. Donald Trump has been widely criticized for his rabid social media use while in office. Often his tweets and posts propagated disinformation. However, for Nick Clegg and Meta, the accuracy or inaccuracy of Donald Trump's posts isn't the issue, so much as the potential impact of those posts. If we think there is content on our platform which will lead to real-world harm, that is, physical harm, then we feel we have a clear responsibility to act against it, Nick Clegg reiterated on Thursday. If Donald Trump is allowed back on Facebook and Instagram, it would grant him access to a much larger social media audience in time for the 2024 presidential election. The website Politico has also covered this story. Meta's top policy executive, Nick Clegg, will be the one to decide whether to reinstate former President Donald Trump's account in January of 2023, he said on Thursday, 22nd of September. Nick Clegg, Meta's President of Global Affairs, said whether to extend Donald Trump's 2-year suspension is a decision that I oversee and I drive. He said that at an event held in Washington by Semaphore, a news organization. It is not a capricious decision, he said. We will look at the signals related to the real-world harm to make a decision whether at the 2-year point, which is in early January next year, whether Donald Trump gets reinstated to the platform. Nick Clegg added that he would consult with Chief Executive Officer Mark Zuckerberg and Meta's board of directors. He said Zuckerberg is focused on building the virtual metaverse, while Nick Clegg is responsible for the implementation and enforcement of broad policy issues. Nick Clegg gave no indication which way he plans to decide, but said he will make that decision on 7th of January 2023.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, effects of discipline in Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the effects of discipline in the Islamic lifestyle. We know that Islam is emphasizing on having discipline, and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has created everything according to a specific discipline. Therefore, when we observe discipline, there are some effects and benefits that we avail from observing discipline. The first benefit which we can count is that we can benefit more from life. observing discipline gives us the chance of benefiting more from the life, which means that when we are having a specific profession, we have abilities, and if we go through the proper plan and discipline, we follow a proper plan and we observe it with the discipline, we have a specific time for enjoyment. We have and enough time to reach the goals that we set in our life. Therefore, this is discipline that gives us more chances to benefit from the life. Even when we look at the Islamic rituals, we see that there is a discipline in it. For example, there's a specific time for the Fajr prayer, for the morning prayer. For the Dhuhr, which is afternoon prayers, there is a specific time. We cannot pray 1 minute before that time, because if we do that, it is not accepted. For the Hajj, there are specific days. We cannot perform Hajj every day in the year whenever we want. Therefore, there is a discipline in every single thing, and we must perform things according to the timings which are set, and we must follow the discipline in order to reach to the goals that we set for ourselves, inshallah. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of the benefits of the discipline. And we said the first benefit is that we can enjoy life and we benefit more from the life if we are observing the discipline. According to the Islamic teachings, especially when we look at the narrations from Imam Kadhim alayhi salam, he says that whenever you want to plan something, it is necessary to have discipline in your life and try to divide your whole day in four different parts, your 24 hours in four different parts. The first part is for the supplications with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, that we must have a specific time to talk to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, to supplicate, to pray, to offer the prayers as well. And this is the first portion. The second portion, the second equal portion, is for earning. And the earnings means that we go out, we earn money in order to bring food for the family, for ourselves. So the second portion is for the work and earning. The third portion is to socializing with our brothers, with friends, with those with those who are sincere to us, so that they can tell us about our mistakes. They can basically warn us about the mistakes that we have, so we can reform ourselves. And the fourth time is for the enjoyment, for the family. And this is very important, because the fourth part, which is for the enjoyment, for the rest that we need, necessary, it is in order to get energy for the first three things that we mentioned. And it is necessary to equally divide all these timings and to benefit out of it, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Basing country issues on others is wrong. Pay attention to the domestic capacities. This is the part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the president and members of the cabinet in Imam Khomeini's Husseiniyyah on August 30th, 2022. Be sincere when you do your job. It will bring blessings to your work. Of course, being sincere does not mean you shouldn't inform people about the things you do. Informing people is not contradictory to sincerity. We also have a narration saying that there is nothing wrong with someone wanting people to find out he or she is doing something good. There's an authentic narration on this in the Book of Kafi. You need to let people know about these things. People's hope and their trust in you will increase with this information. However, the work should be done to please God.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
My third recommendation is the issue of being present among the people. Don't stop doing this. Some people might dramatize it and put labels on it, but I'm not going to repeat these now. Don't get caught up in these things. Go and see the people, hear what they have to say, and be patient. Human beings tend to get tired sometimes, and that's something that I too have experienced. There are times when you may really be tired, but be patient. The frequent presence of the president among the people, it brings many blessings and positive effects, and the same goes for other government officials. Of course, you say you are a government of the people. A government of the people doesn't mean that you should just go among the people. This is necessary, but it is not enough. You should be able to get the people involved in a different work and in different departments. I've said this before. I think I may have mentioned this in your presence. You need to sit down and plan how you can attract the people's participation. You need to define how you can get people involved, whether it is in financial and economic areas or in political fields.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me. All the way
in the limelight.
For 4 years, former President Donald J. Trump treated the federal government and the political apparatus operating in his name as an extension of his private real estate company. The article you're about to hear has been written by New York Times journalist Maggie Haberman. The piece is titled, Another Trump Mystery, Why Did He Resist Returning the Government's Documents? For 4 years, former President Donald J. Trump treated the federal government and the political apparatus operating in his name as an extension of his private real estate company. It all belonged to him, he felt, melded together into a Trump brand that he had been carefully nurturing for decades. My generals, he repeatedly said of the active duty and retired military leaders who filled his government. My money, he often called the cash he raised through his campaign or for the Republican National Committee. My Kevin, he said of Representative Kevin McCarthy, the Republican leader. And White House documents? They're mine, three of Mr. Trump's advisers said that he stated repeatedly when he was urged to return boxes of documents to the government, some of them highly classified, that the National Archives sought after Donald Trump took them with him to Mar-a-Lago, his private club in Palm Beach, Florida, in January of 2021. A nearly 18-month back-and-forth between the government and Donald Trump ended in an extraordinary FBI search for the documents at Mar-a-Lago last week. The question, as with so much else around Mr. Trump, is why? Why did he insist on refusing to turn over government papers that, by law, did not belong to him, igniting another legal conflagration? As with so much else relating to Donald Trump, there is not one easy answer. But here are the main possibilities. Exciting documents. Donald Trump, a pack rat who for decades showed off knick-knacks in his overstuffed Trump Tower office, including a giant shoe that once belonged to the basketball player Shaquille O'Neal, treated the nation's secrets as similar trinkets to brandish. White House aides described how excited he was to show off all the material he had access to, including letters from the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, which he routinely waved at visitors, alarming his advisers. Some of those letters were among the trove that Donald Trump had with him at Mar-a-Lago. The former president's thrills over the intelligence started early. In May of 2017, Donald Trump blurted out classified intelligence provided by Israel during a meeting with two high-level Russian government officials, horrifying his national security team. Just 2 years later, when his intelligence briefers showed him a sophisticated and sensitive photo of an Iranian rocket launch, Donald Trump was gleeful. I want to tweet this, he told the CIA director, the national security advisor, and the director of national intelligence, according to a person with direct knowledge of the event. Officials tried to stop him, but Donald Trump went ahead and shared the photo with what were then his 63 million Twitter followers. L'état, c'est moi. Efforts intended in previous administrations to prevent conflicts of interest in the presidency were viewed derisively by Donald Trump, who never divested from his company and kept an eye on his properties, even as he said publicly he had turned over all management to his sons. Donald Trump embodied Louis XIV's phrase, L'état, c'est moi, or I am the state, his own advisers and several outside observers have said. From my own experience with him, which is bolstered by those around him who are speaking in his defense, his actions seem to fit the pattern, that of a king. He and the state are one and the same, said Mark Zaid, a lawyer who frequently handles cases related to national security and security clearances, including during the Trump presidency. He seems to honestly believe that everything he touches belongs to him, and that includes government documents that might be classified. Donald Trump rarely used a Twitter handle that was assigned to the president, at POTUS, and instead preferred to have his own digital director, Dan Scavino, promote the one in Mr. Trump's own name. The former president also regularly rejected any attempts to try to enforce outside rules, regulations or norms on the White House, and maintained that his close advisers had absolute immunity from some congressional subpoenas. Presidents are not kings, Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson wrote as a federal court judge in Washington in 2019, when over White House objections she ordered Donald McGahn, Donald Trump's former White House counsel, to testify about what House Democrats said was a pattern of presidential obstruction of justice. Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson added, "They do not have subjects bound by loyalty or blood whose destiny they are entitled to control." Although Trump White House officials were warned about the proper handling of sensitive material, aides said Donald Trump had little interest in the security of government documents or protocols to keep them protected. Early on, Donald Trump became known among his staff as a hoarder who threw all manner of paper, sensitive materials, news clips and various other items into cardboard boxes that a valet or other personal aide would cart around with him wherever he went. Donald Trump repeatedly had materials sent up to the White House residence, and it was not always clear what happened to it. He sometimes asked to keep material after his intelligence briefings, but aides said he was so uninterested in the paperwork during the briefings themselves that they never understood what he wanted it for. He also had a habit of ripping up paper from routine documents to classified materials and leaving the pieces strewn around the floor or in a trash can. Officials would have to rummage through the shreds and tape them back together to recreate the documents in order to store them as required under the Presidential Records Act. On some occasions, Mr. Trump would rip up documents, some with his own handwriting on them, and throw the pieces in the toilet, which occasionally clogged the pipes in the White House. He did the same thing on at least two foreign trips, according to former officials. Outside the White House, secure rooms where Donald Trump could review sensitive documents were set up at both Mar-a-Lago and the Trump National Golf Club in Bedminster, New Jersey, although he did not always use them. Donald Trump was meeting with the Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe at Mar-a-Lago in early 2017, for example, when North Korea launched a missile test. Rather than retreating to a secure room, Mr. Trump and his advisers reviewed security documents in the open air on the patio, using the flashlight from an iPhone. Paying club members and their guests looked on at the show, taking photographs and posting them on social media. "No other president has lived in a hotel," said John Bolton, Mr. Trump's third national security advisor. Over time, Donald Trump bristled against the guardrails people tried placing on him, particularly his second White House chief of staff, John Kelly, who tried to impose a more rigid system for classified information. Donald Trump, John Bolton said, never told him he planned to take a document and use it for something beyond its value as a memento. It was sort of whatever he wants to grab for whatever reason, Mr. Bolton said. He may not even fully appreciate precisely why he did certain things. But officials worried particularly about the documents falling into the wrong hands. Other advisers wondered if Donald Trump kept some documents because they contained details about people that he knew. Among the items that presidents are given on overseas trips are biographies of foreign leaders, a former administration official has said. One version is unclassified and fairly routine, but the other is classified and can contain numerous personal details. One of the files that the FBI seized at Mar-a-Lago was marked Information Regarding President of France, about Emmanuel Macron.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
The 8-year anniversary of the September 21st Yemeni revolution was marked in the Yemeni capital with a massive parade. In previous years, people used to flock the streets to celebrate the day all across the country. This year, Yemen's armed forces were the ones to march the streets. A broad range of advanced equipment such as missiles, unmanned aerial vehicles, and air defense systems were also put on display. Many in Yemen believe that the country's military development today is only a result of the revolution. A spokesman for the Yemeni military said that this year's parade is a warning to the Saudi-led coalition to end the war and stop its aggression.
We are awaiting the orders of Sayed Abdul Malik to take our positions on the military fronts in order to liberate our lands from every foreign invader.
A UN-backed ceasefire was signed back in April to end hostilities and pave the way for peaceful dialogue. Despite this, the Saudi government continues to impose an economic blockade on its impoverished neighbor. The kingdom's actions are also jeopardizing efforts for peace.
The ceasefire agreement is set to expire on October 2nd, and if not extended, could lead to the resumption of war. The Ansar Allah leader has already said that the Yemeni army and allied fighters are prepared for any scenario. Yusuf Maudi, Sana'a.
Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi gave his first speech at the United Nations General Assembly, filled with demands for multilateralism, justice, and peaceful logic. Following Iran's official admittance to the Shanghai Cooperation Organization last week, Raisi insisted that there is increasing progress towards cooperative internationalism and away from unilateralism. He decried the choice of capitalism over morality, saying such ideas have lost their legitimacy in public opinion. Raisi spoke of Iran's success in defeating the Daesh terrorist group, called for an end to Israel's 7 decades of ceaseless oppression against Palestinians, and demanded a fair trial and justice for the murderers of Iranian anti-terror hero General Qasem Soleimani in 2020. Raisi said, "The story of the Iranian nation is the story of a nation which stands on its own 2 feet. But the U.S. cannot accept this independence, which explains why, for Washington," Raisi said, "militarism is its security." The Iranian president then continued with more top-level bilateral meetings and also met with a group of analysts, academics, and members of think tanks. No progress appears to have been made this week to restart the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or JCPOA, regarding Iran's nuclear energy program. Iranian negotiations this week with Europe were reportedly tense, as for years, Europe has failed to honestly implement their side of the agreement. Tehran has said that they are willing to revive the 2015 deal, but that Iran needs verifiable guarantees that Washington will not illegally and unilaterally withdraw from the accord again, as it did in May 2018. Ramin Mazahiri, New York City.
Italy is bracing itself for fresh elections on September 25 after the government of national unity led by Mario Draghi collapsed at the end of July. The former president of the European Central Bank and Goldman Sachs managing director Draghi had lost support of the once anti-establishment five-star movement, the League and Silvio Berlusconi's Forza Italia. These three parties failed to back him in a confidence vote on his leadership, triggering a government crisis that ended with President Sergio Mattarella calling for snap elections. This will be the first time the Italians go to the polls in September in the country's Republican history.
There is a strong disaffection with politics in Italy, but while in the elections held 5 years ago, the five-star movement was able to intercept people's anger and dissatisfaction. This time, there doesn't seem to be a party strong enough to do the same.
According to final polls, a right-wing coalition is on course to win a comfortable majority of seats in both houses of the parliament, with the far-right Brothers of Italy party likely to win about 25% of the vote. Its leader, 45-year-old Giorgia Meloni, could be Italy's next prime minister, the Italian media have reported. Her party took around 4% of votes in the last election in 2018.
I don't have faith in establishment politics, but I don't know who to vote for. At the same time, I think not voting could be even worse. I'm really undecided.
The truth is that I don't have much trust in politicians. Will they be able to keep their electoral pledges?
A few days ago, the US government warned that Russian cash had been funneled to Italian parties sympathetic to the Kremlin without specifying which groups had been the recipients of the funds. Some analysts have seen the US move as a warning to those parties which had expressed sympathy for Russian President Vladimir Putin over the past years.
I think the cabinet secretary with the security brief has already made clear that no Italian politicians nor political parties have received funding from Moscow. If Russia has meddled in elections held in foreign countries, it goes without saying the US certainly did the same.
Over 51 million Italians are entitled to vote at the weekend. Sunday's elections will be held amid general disaffection and political discredit. Recent surveys have shown that some 35% of the Italians won't show up at the polls, a trend that, if confirmed, could put turnout at a record low. Max Civili, Rome.
Tensions between British Hindus and Muslims have escalated recently, with the unrest mostly involving young men from both communities and leading to scuffles and assaults. On Tuesday, hundreds of masked Muslim men descended on a Hindu temple in Birmingham. Local Muslims were furious over a recent attempt by the temple to platform a hardline Indian preacher.
Things are a bit tasty here, but ultimately the reason that they've gathered in these numbers is because this centre was planning to platform a very notorious BJP representative who espouses the Hindutva fascist ideology, which is very prominent in India right now and is responsible for a lot of anti-Muslim hate crimes which have taken place there. That ideology has essentially been exported now, unfortunately, into the streets of Britain, and it's been leading up to the point over months.
Tuesday's unrest was sparked following a Hindu mob marching through Muslim-majority areas in the nearby city of Leicester on Saturday, chanting Hindutva slogans. Eyewitnesses say the marchers attacked local Muslim businesses and intimidated the community. Local police failed to stop the rally, which was later confronted by a crowd of Muslims. According to some reports, the violence flared up after a recent Asia Cup cricket match between arch-rivals India and Pakistan. However, Muslims in Leicester have been routinely targeted by Hindu thugs way before the match.
They think they can do the same thing here what they can do in India. We've lived with Hindus for decades and never had any issues with them whatsoever until these guys came along. These young men came along. And they've caused so much grief here. And most Muslims here are very peaceful. They've turned the other cheek for so long, turned the other cheek, called the police. Police haven't done anything. Their inaction has caused this. So I blame the police for this.
As UK police scramble to investigate many incidents, the feud has gone global, as India and Pakistan's high commissions issued passionate statements condemning either side of the divide, fading any hopes of a quick solution to the chaos. Robert Carter, Leicester.
Lula has returned to the southern region of Brazil, holding massive back-to-back campaign rallies with reinforced security. It was in this region that in 2018, Lula suffered an armed attack on his caravan, the same year he was imprisoned for 580 days in Curitiba. Workers' Party President Gleisi Hoffmann became emotional, reflecting back on the year when Lula was jailed in a move to bar his candidacy.
Esse é o seu retorno a Curitiba, Presidente Lula, no braço do povo.
This is your return to Curitiba, President Lula, in the arms of the people. It is redemption. It is the victory of our struggle over 580 days of injustice and over your persecution.
Polls show that the region continues to be a stronghold for Jair Bolsonaro. However, the incumbent faces fierce opposition, mainly as a result of what is perceived as Bolsonaro's failed policies.
O pior problema é que a fome voltou, né?
The worst problem is that hunger is back. You have more than 30 million people suffering from hunger. All the political and public advances that were made for the people are being taken away. People are not able to retire anymore. They want to starve people to death.
Our country needs to rebuild its democracy, rebuild its nation, its unity, and its political democracy by respecting its diverse institutions. With the current government, our country became a worldwide mockery, a joke worldwide. It became a country disregarded by the main international political alliances.
Now, with just 2 weeks remaining, the slogan out here is Lula in just one round. Camila Escalante in Curitiba.
Syria's Ministry of Information organized an event to pay tribute to journalists who were killed while covering the war on the country. Syrian officials attending the ceremony praised the sacrifices of those journalists, who included reporters, cameramen, technicians, and other workers in the media sector.
The martyrs of media are the true heroes on battlefields alongside the Syrian Arab army. They will remain alive in our memory. Meeting their families is a great honor because they represent truly an example of strength and loyalty to the homeland. We are honoring them today to thank them for their great sacrifices.
Families and relatives received certificates of appreciation expressing to Press TV how proud they are that their family members' blood was one of the main reasons for Syria's victory over terrorism.
This event means a lot to me. When I receive a call on an honoring, I feel that my son is still remembered and even still around. This homeland requires us to sacrifice. Without sacrifice, we would have no future.
My son was a war correspondent. He was martyred near Kanetra. He was my only son. He sacrificed his blood for the country. The enemy and its media outlets were strong and working to weaken Syria. But thanks to the sacrifices of Syrians, we triumphed.
Press TV's correspondent Maya Nasser was also among the list of journalists who lost their lives during the Syrian conflict. He was killed by terrorists in 2012 while covering an attack on the Ministry of Defense in the Syrian capital. He is one of many journalists who was keen on always being on front lines to deliver the truth and perform his duty. Despite knowing the dangers of reporting on battlefields, many journalists risk their lives to report on the truth of events. Tens were killed or injured, defending the principles of journalism and showing responsibility in conveying what was truly happening on the ground in the face of a ferocious mainstream media campaign to distort the reality. Muhammad Ali, Damascus.
Free Pigeons for a World Free of War. Iran's War University hosted the director of the United Nations Information Center in Iran, Inger Marie Venise, along with military attachés from different embassies, to attend this ceremony dubbed the Book of Peace and Defense, which is themed with the 1980s Iran-Iraq War. The UNIC head read out a statement from United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres during the event.
A time to observe 24 hours of non-violence and ceasefire. We renew our call for all people to do more than lay down their weapons.
This event comes on the occasion of the National Sacred Defense Week, which marks the beginning of the 1980 to 1988 Iran-Iraq War, the longest armed conflict of the 20th century, which was waged by the then Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein and heavily funded by the West. Every year on the occasion, the Islamic Republic holds nationwide ceremonies to highlight its resistance against the Iraqi forces.
At that time, the Ba'athist regime, and on top of it, Saddam Hussein, was fully supported by numerous Western countries. The war continued for 8 years, but we fought the invaders and did not give an inch of our soil to them. So today, we as veterans feel bound to transfer our expertise and tactics to the new generation to preserve our defense might.
Saddam Hussein failed to make any achievement in his war against Iran, but the humanitarian effects of the offensive are still lingering in Iran, with many war veterans continuing to reel from exposure to chemical substances used by Iraqi forces. Those chemical materials were reportedly supplied by a number of German, French, and Dutch corporations.
The Islamic Republic takes great pride in how it defended the country during the Iraqi-imposed war, calling it the sacred defense and a drive for its present self-sufficiency in the military sector. Meanwhile, Tehran holds this annual commemoration ceremony as a chance to promote peace and shed light on the dark consequences of war. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Amid international calls for renewing the UN brokered truce, the Yemeni Center for Human Rights has held a press conference in Sana'a to release a report titled The Alleged Truce. The report highlights the Saudi-led coalition's violations of the UN agreement since it was brokered in April.
Saudi Arabia's violations were committed from the first day of the war, but they continued even under the UN truce. The most important violations were the non-compliance with the terms of the truce, which included reducing the number of scheduled flights and specifying only one destination instead of two, as well as the continued detention of fuel ships. There is a breach on the essence of the agreement.
The report says the Saudi-led coalition has committed over 14,000 violations, including waging 278 airstrikes, which led to the death of Yemeni civilians.
As a human rights center, we affirm that the most important violations are the loss of life. Unfortunately, during the truce, 70 Yemeni civilians, including women and children, were killed. The siege has also continued during the truce. This has caused the deaths of thousands of civilians due to the lack of fuel in hospitals.
Recently, the UN Security Council urged warring sites in Yemen to extend the truce, saying it has had tangible benefits for the humanitarian situation in the war-torn country. So far, there are no signs